Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Triple Threat Podcast. I am DJ Shockley. Scotty D is right around the corner for sure. I want to thank you guys for being here. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We appreciate all the good feedback. We appreciate everybody watching and listening to the Triple Threat Podcast. Also want to thank Snappy Makes Homes Happy. They provide electrical, plumbing, and heating and air service to all of Metro Atlanta. Lifetime parts and labor. Locally owned and operated. Support numerous local high schools around the area. Hey, if you're looking for them, if you want to find a way to get in contact with them, here's the number. 770-424-SNAP. Or you can check them out on the web at snappyservices.com. Everybody has IG, they have the web, find them at snappyservices.com. Remember, electrical, plumbing, heating, air, and we also got a cool promo code we use, Triple Threat. You get $75 off that first appointment. So use them, they are great guys. Scotty D knows them well. I'm getting to know them really well. They're great dudes already. I get a chance to talk to them. So Snappy makes your home happy. Don't forget, you Snappy, man. You Snappy. All right. On today's show, we got my man, my frat brother, joining the show, Hugh Douglas. If you don't know Hugh, obviously, this guy played in the NFL for 10 years, went to Central State, HBCU. He's going to talk about his times in college. He's going to talk about what happened while he was in the league, how he became a three-time Pro Bowler. So I'm excited to talk to Hugh about a lot of different subjects, man. He's going to get down and dirty of some of the stuff that's happened in his life. So I'm looking forward to talking to Hugh Douglas, man. Scotty D, how you doing today, brother?
What's up? I'm pretty pumped right now. I don't know if you can tell, but
I can't tell at all. For people who can't see right now who are listening to this via on the podcast or so, Scotty D is rocking his LA Dodgers shirt. And you remember last week when I tried to talk to him about the Dodgers, he didn't want to hear. So just a week later, he's all on the Dodgers bandwagon as they are in, obviously, the World Series. Took game one, 8-3. Big win for him there in that ball game. Kershaw, I can't believe he actually played well in a postseason game. Scotty D, I know you're happy. I'm going to give you the floor to talk about the Dodgers for 12 seconds.
Well, I just hope that this is the year. That's all. That's all I can say about it. They all played like this is the year. You know, Kershaw was dominant, and then Mookie. Oh, he's terrific.
And, bro, you know what's crazy? Y'all lineup is dumb. I mean, that Seager dude is crushing it. I mean, that lineup is like every batter. You're like, this dude can hit it out. This dude can base hit you to death. I mean, that lineup is tough to go against.
Yeah, the same guy that got a pinch hit home run in Game 7, Kike Hernandez, he got a pinch hit again last night. That's hard. I don't know if people understand how hard it is to come up cold like that, get a pinch hit, much less a home run. Yeah. But just to get a pinch hit coming cold off the bench, that's hard.
Yeah, it's hard. So kudos to your Dodgers, man. The Braves fans are not happy with the Dodgers. But, hey, we got nobody to blame but ourselves. So good luck to you guys the rest of the way through the World Series. Let's jump into the NFL. Home team Atlanta Falcons got a big win last week, beat up on the Minnesota Vikings. Forced Kirk Cousins, who's making tons of money, who was stealing right now, I believe, from the National Football League, through a couple of different interceptions in that game. But the Falcons played well, put it together, and finished a ball game. Matt Ryan had one of his best games, completed over 70%. Julio was back, another 100-yard game for him. Ran good. Defense caused a couple turnovers, which was fun to watch. So, Falcons 1-5 right now. Raheem Morris 1-0 as an interim head coach. Any thoughts on these Falcons? You think, you know, what can transpire in the next 10 games here, Scotty D?
Well, I feel like that's what we had hoped to see from the Falcons coming into this year, right?
Yep.
I didn't expect to be undefeated or anything. We had a brutal schedule. Let's just not get it twisted, right? So I didn't expect it to be, you know, to be perfect at this point. But what we saw Sunday was what we kind of thought this team was. So kudos to Raheem Morris getting these guys ready to play. I don't know enough X's and O's to know how much I like Raheem Morris. I know he didn't have success in Tampa, and I just from geography bias, I kind of keep an eye on the Bucks. So if he spends something off, great. You know, that's cool.
Here's the thing, you know. Didn't work out his first time, like you mentioned, in Tampa. Mm-hmm. Has had a different opportunity now. Maybe learn from that particular situation and maybe puts the Falcons in a good situation going forward in the next 10 games. So we'll see. Other big news, obviously, we talked about the Dallas Cowboys last week and losing Dak Prescott, Andy Dalton, why they, you know, went out and got him. And not the outcome you wanted from the Dallas Cowboys as they take a big L to the Arizona Cardinals. Andy Dalton didn't play really good through a couple of interceptions. But the big story, Zeke putting the rock on the ground. Man. Everybody thought he would have to carry this offense now.
Yeah.
And they can't do it with Zeke putting the ball on the ground. Other news, the Patriots lose and Cam's a turn. Wasn't their best showing. Cam had a little rustiness happening in that ball game. So Patriots lose. And then other big games this week, you got Pittsburgh at Tennessee. Two undefeated teams. Scotty Duke, who wins? You saw Derrick Henry go crazy last week.
Oh, I know.
200 yards. Can you do it versus that Pittsburgh?
You know what? Though? It's in Tennessee. I'm going to pick Tennessee. I picked Tampa last week. You didn't mention that. I picked Tampa to win that game, but I'm going to stick with the home team again. I'm going to go with I'm gonna go with Titans.
The Tampa Green Bay game wasn't really what I thought it was going to be.
No.
Green Bay struggled. Aaron Rodgers struggled in the game in Tampa.
Must have been too hot.
It was a new emergence for Gronk, though. Gronk played, you know, had an emergence. Other big games, Seattle and Arizona. Obviously, two teams that are playing really well. Seattle still undefeated. Can Arizona get them in the lost column? The Bears. Do you still not believe in the Bears?
I don't.
They take on the Rams.
I'm going to say they lose by 10. They'll lose by 10 next week, and that's a huge loss in NFL.
All right, man. Other news, man. We saw last weekend in college football, one of the biggest games, number 2 versus number 3. My Dogs go into Tuscaloosa and take an L. Play good in the first half.
Yeah, yeah.
Second half, not so good. Alabama really took off. Mac Jones is legit. I think he is legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate right now. He's got some outstanding receivers on the outside, but the offensive line was big and physical in that second half. Georgia struggled. Thoughts on that ball game, Scotty D?
Well, not much more than you just said, but it was a really good first half by both teams. It was a really competitive game. It was exciting to watch. I was actually in Birmingham with a bunch of Georgia fans watching in an Alabama bar, and there was some fun back and forth early in the game. We actually at halftime we went back to the hotel to watch, and I think most of my friends are glad we did. But it was a couple mistakes, I think. A couple mistakes made the difference in the game. You know, the final score was pretty significant, but I think a couple mistakes made the difference in the outcome, I believe.
Yeah, we'll see if Georgia gets an opportunity to play Alabama again.
Well, we'll see.
I still believe Stetson Bennett probably give Georgia the best opportunity until we see JT Daniels.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But right now, Stetson Bennett played good in the first half, just had to come from behind the second half, and tough spot to be in, first time on the road in the SEC in a major environment like that. So we'll see if Georgia can rebound and come back and possibly see Alabama again in the SEC championship game.
Yeah.
Your Florida Gators will sit out another week, as Dan Mullen said last week. He had COVID. You guys had a bunch of dudes who had COVID or contact tracing. So Florida, again, has to sit out. Thanks to your Gators and a couple more teams, there's no game for me to call this weekend. So I appreciate your Gators, Scotty D. I know you enjoyed that.
Well, Georgia and Florida both lose their bye week before the game, you know.
Yeah,
so that's significant. But
usually both teams had that bye week, so.
Yep.
Other news, Clemson. Oh my goodness, what they did to Georgia Tech. 73-7, unreal. I mean, and they played the seventh string in that ball game and they still scored. So
I heard somebody said I heard somebody on the radio say that they played 85 players, 86 players.
Pretty much everybody on the roster.
That is insane.
So not the way I know Coach Collins wanted that first thing to go with them. North Carolina. How about North Carolina? Everybody thought they might have been a contender. Goes down and loses in Tallahassee to FSU. Had a chance to come back at the end of the ball game. They had a couple drops at the end of the game that could have got them in range and had a chance to do it. So North Carolina, maybe not the contender we thought it was. Now, the biggest news of college football –
Well, I was just gonna say, I think it's gonna be a weird season. You know, I think there's, I'm questioning how many undefeated teams there'll be left at the end of the season. You know, I think, I still think Florida, you know, they got some, they got to do some upgrades on their defense and what their play calling, I believe, but still think I'd take Florida in a rematch against Texas A&M. I still don't think that. Alabama is that much better than Georgia. So I think there might be some trip ups this year that might be more excused or excusable than normal. So I wouldn't cut out UNC just yet. Plus they're in the other division than Clemson. So they can still, you know, get to that championship game.
Yeah. A lot more ball to be played. You're right, Scotty D. Good point, man. A lot of things can happen as this season progresses. Mm-hmm. And the last big news from college football, the Big Ten is back. Finally, the Big Ten is back. I'm sure everybody's excited to see the Big Ten get going so we can get to talking about where they rank. Do they make it to the playoffs? And obviously, everybody is looking forward to seeing Ohio State take on Nebraska at noon on Fox on Saturday. So it's going to be fun. Iowa State and Oklahoma State. Michigan takes on the Gophers. Two ranked teams there. Cincinnati and SCU, all the teams that have some – play going on this weekend, but everybody's excited to see the Big Ten and see what Ohio State does. Justin Fields, that team was really good last year, maybe a couple plays away from playing in the national championship. So, you excited about Big Ten being back?
Sure, yeah. I looked at the schedule and you know, I went on ESPN's website and looked at the full schedule, all the D1 teams playing, and it's starting to look like a normal Saturday a little bit. Just you know, so almost everybody's playing now. So, heck yeah, I'm looking forward to them playing.
Scotty D, you guys got any shows or anything you and your wife watch at night, or you got anything you guys binge on that you like to look at?
Yeah, I probably binge. I probably do a little bit too much of that. My wife doesn't make it up too late. She's usually asleep on the couch before we can get in binge mode. But we watch I watch the touchy shows with her. We watch This Is Us and stuff like that.
This Is Us, yeah. See, I was watching This Is Us for a while, and man, it was tough for me to continue watching it, man. I'm the one in my house though that
fall asleep.
I don't know what it is. I get to about 12 o'clock and my wife's like, seriously, for real? You're just going to go to sleep again in the middle of the show. And I'm like, yeah, turn it on. Let's watch it. And I'm be the one that sleeps. So we watched this show on Netflix called In the Dark. That was pretty good. We got a couple different ones we like to binge watch on. I like The Blacklist. I used to be on Dexter for a while. So
oh, yeah.
I got a couple shows I like.
That
man.
Was a good one.
Dexter was good, man. Yeah. No doubt. All right, man. It's that time. Talk to my frat brother.
Bring him on.
Big Hugh Douglas is coming up next. He's gonna talk about a lot of stuff. Trust me. Tune in right here on the Triple Threat Podcast. My man Hugh Douglas coming up next. All right, welcome back to the Triple Threat Podcast. I told you my man was coming up, and we have him finally on the line. My Central State guy, three-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro, college football, Black College Football Hall of Fame, my man, Hugh Lamont Douglas is in the house.
I've been called Lamont. Hey, listen, I haven't been called Lamont in a long time. Now, let me say, I had your number in my phone, right, so I lost my phone. So, yeah. You know how the new iPhones, right, they ring, like they'll say, might be so-and-so, it might be this.
Yeah.
It came up Donald. And I'm like,
Whoa. Let's halt that. Not too many people know that. Let's leave that alone right there. Don't bring that out. Can't have everybody knowing the government name.
Okay, I'll leave it alone. But I was like, wait a minute. And then I got to thinking, I'm like, I only know one Shockley. I don't know one. And that's why I said, DJ, okay.
That's what threw me off, because you said, I lost all my daggum contact, but then you said Shock. I was like, how you lose contact, but he know who it is?
And it said Shockley. And I was like, and I'm thinking, and I sat there for a minute, and I'm thinking, I'm like, man, I only know one Shockley. I only know one. I said, Shock? I was like, okay, yeah.
Well, man, I appreciate you coming on, man. I appreciate you being able to share a little wisdom with our family here, the Triple Threat Podcast. Obviously, I got love for you. You're my frat brother. Remember, yes, the 5-minute signal fraternity. So, yeah. So, you know, we always keep it cordial, keep it funny, man. So, there are a lot of great things in your career, man. A lot of great things in your life. What's it like now as the kid who grew up in Mansfield, Ohio? What's it like now being in the spot you are? But let's go back to high school. Did you always know that you was going to be that dude playing on Sundays?
No, I didn't. Doc, when I started playing football, it was to stay out of trouble.
Right.
You know, I was that guy that was running around with the wrong group of kids, you know, getting in fights, you know, doing stuff like that. And it was for me more of a way to channel that negative energy, you know, into something positive. Right. So I didn't start playing football till my junior year. And I got to give a shout out to my man, Ralph Ross. His name is Khalil Ali, now Daddy Ross.
Okay.
He was the one, you know, first he got me in the track. I was running track for a little while. And he got me into football, him and another
five. Were you, there are a lot of people who say they were running track. Were you like running track, or you were like throwing the discus and shot put?
Yeah, I was third leg. I ran a third leg.
Third leg.
Yeah,
that's a real deal.
Hey, if we still use VHS cameras and stuff like that, hey, I can pull out some VHS, some gritty grain film for you. I can pull out some game film for you. Yeah, I used to come around that corner. Hey, like that. Hey,
lean around that head.
Yeah, so I did that just to stay out of trouble, man. You know, that's what I did. And, you know, Daddy Ross was a guy who told me that and Coach Jefferson, who was at the time, did not know this, found this out later, was a brother of Phi Beta Sigma fraternity.
Okay. Blue Phi Brothers there, well, man.
Yeah, man. It got me into sports, helped me fill out my financial aid papers and went to school, man, and started playing football. I didn't play my junior year.
Oh man, I don't think a lot of people probably realize you didn't play till your junior year. Okay, so how big were you as a junior when you first got started? Because people see you now and they say, I still don't want no parts of Hugh Dunning. What was your size in high school when you first started playing in as a junior?
You know what, man? If I remember correctly, I was about 6'2", 245, 250. But I had a late bloomer. I was a real late bloomer. So I was the fat kid. I was the kid that was running around, that had the, you probably remember this, Shock, you're too young for this. I had a members only jacket.
Oh, I know about the members only jacket.
Shock, that I used to wear all the time.
That all black jacket.
Yeah, because I had the man boobs and I wanted to try to hide my little man boobs and stuff because I was ashamed of my body. So yeah, I was that guy, man. And then one summer, you know, my brother found some weights. My brother worked at the junkyard, right?
Right, so
a box of weights and he brought it home.
Right.
So I started lifting the weights, man, and before you know it, the summer, body changed, started playing football, man, and the rest, they say, is history.
Man, that's pretty cool right there. I mean, we obviously can see you've been on them weights since you've been out. But let's talk about leaving high school. Did you ever in your mind say, yeah, I want to play in college? Or after your junior year, you was like, maybe I can make this into something that can get me an education?
You know what, man? Again, Daddy Ross and Stan Jefferson, those were the two guys that were real instrumental and kind of guided me, because they saw something in me at that age I didn't see. You know, right. growing growing up in Ohio and knowing what I know now, these were two guys that were very, very instrumental in pointing me in the right direction because they believed in me. They saw something in me that I didn't see. When I went to school, Doc, I went to school because I know I needed to get a job because as soon as I turned 18,
you was going to be out of the house.
Yeah, I had to go. You know what it is. Dad looking at me like, hold up, grown ass man. You got to get here. So for me, going to school, not really having an idea of what I really wanted to do, it was just a way to buy me a little bit more time to figure out what I wanted to do with my life before, I ran out of time at home.
No doubt. That's what I think a lot of people do. I don't know a lot of people who went to college knowing exactly what they wanted to do without changing it a few times. Yeah. How did you choose Central State, or did Central State choose you? Like, how did that process go about, and how did you go about choosing the college that you wanted to go to?
You know what, Shaq? I was in a position where playing football for 2 years, and there were some schools that were interested, but it was like I was on the radar for 2 years. And as you know, some of these kids have been playing; they've been on these colleges' radar for years. That's the process that I did not understand. And you know, especially being here in Georgia now, I realized, it's just amazing to me when you talk about the grades that these kids get and the fact that they go to these quarterback camps and they go to these D-lineman camps and things of that nature, that these time schools be there and they got to get on. You got to get on somebody's radar quick. You just ain't going to be that cat that just pop up and all of a sudden you can ball. No, this is the whole process. So I was a guy that was a late bloomer. And so now I'm trying to get recruited by schools, and they're like, well, we got this 4- or 5-star kid that we've been seeing forever. You've only been playing for 2 years, so we really don't know. So I had a few offers. Some of them fell through because you know how it goes. We're going to try to get you until we get the guy that we want. And then that was the case. So ended up going to Central State. Was like the only place I could go. And even when I went to Central State, Shaq, had to really walk on to get an opportunity. So walked on there. And, did my thing there and got a scholarship.
You talk about doing your thing. Let me go to my notepad right here to bring up some of these numbers. 42 sacks in 32 games in 3 years. You had 13 games where you had multiple sacks. And then you helped your team win the NIAA Natty your sophomore year. Then your senior year, Defensive Player of the Year. Let's go back to that sophomore year because, obviously, that's when you first got your real taste of college ball, for real playing in a game. Talk about that first experience, getting in there. And obviously, you playing at an HBCU. What's it like being at an HBCU first off, and then the other part of it, playing the game?
Woo, boy, I tell you.
Woo, like he said, woo.
Woo, hey, Sean. You know, I know you went to UGA. UGA is a beautiful campus. Beautiful campus. A lot of beautiful – boy, ain't nothing like HBCU, Shaq. I just get goosebumps thinking about my HBCU and just the experience. You know, I'm talking about the experience as a whole, man. Being on campus, some of the financial hardships that school has and things of that nature. It's just something different, man, that kind of sticks with you. It was a great experience. And playing college ball at that level was a lot different because it wasn't that big-time program that you played at. You know, it was – competition was a little different. You didn't know what you're going to get week to week. But had a lot of fun, man. Had a lot of fun with the bands and things that nature. The culture is just different. Not saying that others don't have that. But when you go to an institution, a predominantly black institution, that has the success rate that most HBCUs have in the real world, and you can just see other people in your position being successful – it's a beautiful thing, man. And I think that's the thing that, you know, a lot of us come from different areas and different walks of life, different levels of financial whatever.
Yeah.
And see all of us in one area doing well, because we don't get a chance to see that for the most part.
No doubt. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of us come from small towns where most people that look like us aren't really doing so great.
You're right.
So to see us as a collective group doing well, going to class, getting the education, asking the professor the tough questions, you know, rising to another level, man. It's something different. It's something different.
I gotta love HBCUs for sure, because my mom and dad both went to Florida A&M. When I was coming out, my dad made me take a visit to Florida A&M just so I knew what an HBCU was about. And yeah. I had to give him that, you know, give him that look. Obviously, he knew I was probably going to another school, but it was cool to be able to have that kind of experience. And, I mean, I still love going to the Battle of the Bands today. I saw a commercial for it the other day. They're going to be streaming it. I'm like, I'm all in on that. So it's definitely a different environment. When you were at Central State, did you realize, I got something? Like, I can turn the cone on these dudes. I can go rip the head off that QB on the other side. Like, I'm just that much more of an athlete. When did it click for you in that 3-year period where you played?
You know what, Sean? I know you think I'm going to be lying when I say this, but it never registered until it happened.
Really?
Because, you know, just being in a position, coming from a small school,
yeah,
you know, and thinking about, like, because when we played, like, we would watch, we're at school talking about the UGAs. We're at school talking about, in Ohio, talking about Alabama. We're talking about the Florida Gators. Right. And we're looking at these cats that are playing. Like, I remember, because it was Copeland and Curry for Alabama back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
John Copeland and Eric Curry. I remember they were the guys that when I was in school, we were talking about.
Right.
And we were, yeah, they gonna play on. They playing on Sunday. They playing on Sunday.
Right.
And those are the guys that we were watching. So I'm playing the same position that they're playing, and I'm looking at them and like, God damn, there's some big dudes that they're playing against every week. And I'm thinking to myself, the cats that I'm seeing that I'm killing don't look like that. They don't look like that. So it was one of those things where you looked at it. And Big Daddy Dan Wilkerson from Ohio State, he was another guy. Like, you're looking at the cast and be like, hey, man, you know, I'm just enjoying the time that I'm having. You know, it's great. I'm going to be one hell of a gym teacher, because I'm going to be a phys ed teacher. I'm going to go ahead and do that and just be
So did that put doubt in your mind when you saw the dude that these other universities are way better?
Yeah, because it's like, Shot, when you're playing at a small school and you're looking at what's being drafted and what the criteria is and what you're being told that you can't be. Yeah, it's a little bit of doubt. It's a little bit of doubt there.
Yeah.
And when scouts started to come around, I was just like, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, I'm gonna maintain my focus, because you just never know how that's gonna work out.
Right.
So I'm kind of in that space. I was in that space.
What's your advice to kids nowadays that are playing at smaller schools and they feel like, how can I make it to that next level when I'm playing against these guys who they probably don't think people are looking at or don't get the prime time games? You don't see them on ESPN or ABC every week. What's your advice to those guys? Because you are a direct result of playing at a small school but still was able to make it. What's the advice you give to those kids today that are maybe kind of doubting themselves about, can they play on that next level?
First of all, believe in yourself. And work your butt off every day. Because, boy, when you do get an opportunity, you got to shine. And you got to shine than any other star that's out there. Because they're going to be looking at you, and they're going to have doubts. But as long as you believe in yourself, man, you got a shot. Now, what I said does not mean I did not believe in myself. I just knew that my role was going to be a little bit tougher.
A little tougher.
Than everybody else's. It was going to be a little bit tougher. And it wasn't like I was shying away from that moment. I was just preparing myself for whatever was going to come next. But with that said, every day when the scouts started coming around shop, I had my butt out there on the track every day. I was lifting weights every day, because I was like, if this opportunity comes for me, I'm going to take full advantage of it. Now, I know that there's a strong possibility that it might not work out, and I got to have a plan B. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. I just had to have a plan B. But I'm going to see if I can make this plan A work first. I'm going to go ahead and work.
Ain't no wrong with putting everything in on that plan A and going hard on it. I understand that.
Definitely.
So you get an opportunity. Obviously, you had a great career at Central State. Things went well for you. Round one, pick 16, you get that call. What was that call like? What was the emotion like for you, your family? And what was the first thing you thought about when you got that call?
Well, first of all, Shock, you know, normally when you're projected to be a first-round draft pick, you're invited to New York.
Well, Hugh, I don't know about that. I was a seventh round guy, so I don't know about what it's like to be a first round pick.
My bad, Frat. Most cats that they're projected to be in the first round, they get invited to New York.
Right.
I didn't get invited at all. So I was still kind of like whatever. I was kind of like whatever.
So you still were projected first round, but still didn't get invited.
Well, they didn't know. They I was all over the board. They didn't know whether I was going to win the first round. They didn't know where I was going to go. So they didn't want to invite me. Got and have me out there, and I don't get drafted. So I'm at home, and draft day comes around. And draft day fell on a Saturday. And, back then in, 95, they had something in Atlanta called the Freaknik.
Something.
Yeah.
Something called.
So I want to go to the Freaknik. Telling me that I have to be at this draft party that they're having. I got to be there. And I'm like, dude. And I'm thinking in my head, hey, man, this is a guy's head. There ain't nothing I can do.
Right.
I can't worry about it. So if I'm going to go out, let me go out with a bag. I'm trying to get to Atlanta. And so he told me, man, you got to be here. You got to wait. So we waiting around. And, the draft is going on. Like I said, I don't know where I'm going. And, the phone, around the 14, 15 pick, the phone start ringing. And it's the New York Jets. And I visited the Jets, and Dick Haley was the GM at the time, and he called and said, "Hey, we're going to pick you with the 16th pick. Do you want to play for the New York Jets?" Shocked.
Talk to me.
Oh, I paused. I wanted to say no.
Bro, can y'all have to go ahead and pay? Let the next team get me.
I was like, "Who? You ain't in no position to be telling nobody no." But that was my first thought, because coming from the Midwest, I didn't want to go to New York. I was like, New York? I didn't want to go to New York. And I said, they said, "You want to play for the Jets?" And I said, "Yeah."
You don't sound too excited, son.
No, hey, you best believe I sounded, when that phone call, when they heard me, I sounded excited. I jump in my car. I had a Chevy Impala shock. I'm 100 miles run. I'm in Atlanta. I make it to the A about 12 o'clock at night on a Saturday.
It just gets started.
I get lost in Atlanta. I get out the car. It's me and three of my homeboys.
Oh, that's all you need to walk around.
Oh, man, listen. Jumped out the car, left one homeboy driving the car, walking around Atlanta. They didn't find me till Sunday. Around Atlanta trying to find me. I don't know. We ain't got no cell phones, none shot. I just jumped out of the car. I'm in Atlanta.
He was out. That's a pretty cool story, man. I mean, I think everybody can relate to those days of Freaknik. I think everybody can relate to wanting to be out and about during that time. Definitely good times in the A. All right, you play for the Jets for a few years, then you get traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, and this is where it all starts for Lamont. Talk about that time. Talk about getting to the Eagles, man. And what happened when you got to the Eagles? Because that's where you became the All-Pro. That's what became the first team All-Pro that 2000, 2002. What happened in Philly that changed your kind of trajectory going forward?
Well, it was two things that happened. And one of them happened when I was in New York with the Jets. And that was with Bill Parcells. And Bill Parcells, me and him really didn't get along. Because he came in and we were running a 4-3 defense. I had just came off of being the rookie of the year, had two sacks, got hurt the year before, and he comes in and he changes the defense to a 3-4 because they had a linebacker named James Ferrier that was drafted him first round draft pick. So they changed the defense to put him on the field. So me and Bill Parcells are not getting along. I'm the problem child in the locker room. You know, I'm the one that, I'm quoting stuff like from the movie Friday. When he leave, I'll be talking again. When he tell me to shut up, I'll shut up. Yeah, I'm doing stuff. That's me. I go in his office one day and I tell him I don't want to be here, because that's what my agent told me to do. Tell him you don't want to be here. Yeah. So Bill Parcells sits me down and said, "Listen, son, I'm going to do everything I can to get you out of here." He said, "But just learn, just try to learn how to be. Just learn how to be. I'm looking at him like, what you talking about? Didn't understand what he was trying to say at that time. And basically what he was trying to tell me was don't be so selfish. Like try to learn how to be a part of a team.
Right.
You know, and I took that, you know, I get traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, go to Philly. The Jets go, 9-7 or 10-6 or something, go to the playoffs that year. I go to Philadelphia. We go 3-13. Ray Rose gets fired. So now in walks Tommy Brazier. Tommy Brazier is my D-line coach. And Tommy Brazier calls me in office. And this is like I'm going into my fifth year in the league, I think it was. And Tommy said, listen, what do you want to be? He said, it's about time. He said, you've been in the league and you kind of like, you need to start to figure out what type of player you want to be. You got talent. You need to figure it out. And, you know, that was kind of the fire that lit under me. And then we drafted Corey Simon. Florida State. And I remember Corey was number 53, right?
Yeah.
And Corey, I'm in my fifth season, and Corey walks up to me and says, hey, let me take that 53 to the Pro Bowl because you ain't about to do it.
This as a rookie?
As a rookie.
And you've been around 5 years.
Woo! Shock. Was hotter than fish grease. Was hot.
I bet. Ooh. Yeah.
He's like, hey, man, let me take that number to the Pro Bowl. You ain't about
Pro
to do
Bowl.
It. Woo! So that was a little – all of those things right there.
That really was the fire.
Before, shout out to Corey Simon. But you remember that, Corey, when you said that?
Yeah.
That
sounded like a light switch happened right there. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a light switch moment right
there. 2000, 2002, Pro Bowl. First team, all team pro 2000, 2002. So I think the light switch definitely came on for you. You mentioned rookie of the year in 95, 80 sacks in your career, 15 forced fumbles. You even got an interception. You even got a defensive touchdown.
One.
Do you remember that one defensive touchdown, one interception?
I do. I remember it was against the touchdown was against the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
And boy, I remember like the thing shot running down the field like for 60 some yards. You and I remember on the field and being like, damn, I gotta go back on defense. that's the one thing I remember about that. I gotta go back on defense. And interception, that was against, I think it was against Chris Chandler against the Falcons in a playoff game. It was in Philadelphia. And I remember it was fire zone. And I hated dropping on fire zone. Because you know when you're dropping on fire zones, that's an opportunity to get to the quarterback that I ain't got.
Right.
So man,
we know y'all don't really like to be out there in that space.
And you know what I mean? It's different now though, because them young kids nowadays, they're athletes in that position.
They hybrids now. Yeah.
Dude, shock. I jumped up and I caught it. And I couldn't believe I caught it. Number one, I couldn't really, it was more of a reaction than an actual catch, because I didn't see it. It was just one of those things. I didn't even see it. It was just like we fire zone dropped so much that it just happened. I just happened to pick my hands up and it was happened to be there. And when I caught it, I was like, oh shit, I caught it.
What am I do? Where am I go?
Hey, we're straight to the sideline.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. You got one under your belt. That's pretty cool.
That's all.
Man, you ended your career. You went back to Philly. I was in the career in Philly. What went into saying, okay, this is it for me? Sometimes guys get pushed out. Sometimes guys say, I'm done. What was it for you on the latter parts of your career?
Couldn't do some of the things I used to do. I knew it, Shock, when I would wake up. You know, this is the thing. When you play football and you're young, you feel invincible.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that when you go back, you look at some of that old Georgia film, you look at some of those hits you took, you look at me like, damn, I can't believe.
Right. I walked take one of them back. Take one of them now.
Ain't it amazing how when you look back at your career and you look at some of the things that your body was able to do, and you're like, wow, I can't believe that. I mean, it's amazing.
Right.
I had one of those moments playing when I hit the ground. You know, normally you hit the ground, you pop right back up and keep going because the adrenaline's flowing and everything. I got to the point where when I would hit the ground, it took me a little bit longer every time to pick myself up off the ground. I remember being in training camp that last year, Shock, and I was telling Trey Thomas was my pod mate. You know, we lived in pods.
Yeah.
I was like, Trey, I don't think I'm gonna make it. And he was like, oh man, I ain't trying to hit that. You giving up? You giving up? And I said, no, bro, I ain't giving up. I can't go. And he was like, oh man, bump that. Go on, take your. I see you at practice. He ain't trying to hear. And he's like, you better go to GNC and get you some vitamins or something. So I go to the GNC. Trying to get that recovery because I would wake up in the morning, Shock, and you know, you wake up refreshed. Yeah. It wasn't no more. It wasn't like, it was like I was a battery that wouldn't recharge.
Yeah.
So it was like the day after training camp, this is how I knew I was on the chopping block because I was still playing in the last preseason game. So, like, I'm in there in the fourth quarter and I was like, yeah, rap. This is a rap. And they had a young guy by the name of Trent Cole. That was behind me, and Trent was falling. So I saw my replacement right there. I saw it.
Saw the writing on the wall.
I saw it. So I laid in the bed, shocked that next day, and we were supposed to go in for treatment or whatever. I didn't even go. I just laid in the bed. I was just like, I'm just gonna wait for this phone call because I know it's coming.
Knew it was coming.
Yeah. So it came. Tom Hecker called, and he was like, "Hey man, what's going on?" I was like, "Waiting on you." I was like, "Waiting on you." Because I'm not quick.
Hey, I ain't never heard nobody say, I knew you would call.
I wasn't going to quit. Y'all had to push me out. So I told him, I said, waiting on you. He was like, yeah, bring your playbook. Brought my playbook in, Shock, and that was it. I was kind of relieved. But at the same time, you're like, damn, because we think about, we've been playing football your whole life. In your 30s. Early 30s.
Right.
And now you're like, damn, what am I going to do? What's the next step? Because you got your whole life ahead of you. What you gonna do?
That's a good point, man. I think a lot of people don't realize, like, you can play 10 years in this league and you can still only be 30, 31, where most people just start their career and now you know what I do next. So that's a good point, man. Life after football obviously has been good, man. I was looking up some stuff on you, bro. It said in 2011, you co-hosted Six Nations of Championship, a rugby show, BBC America.
Yeah.
And it said you took a stab at a sport, interviewed zookeepers, and took Irish step dancing lessons.
All of that in the bag of chips.
What is that about? Rugby?
It was more to show the fun side of me.
Yeah.
And just to get out there, I practiced with a rugby team. Rugby's no joke, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, that it's a derivative of football. You know, that's where our game comes from rugby. Right. And, you know, the players are it's like a mesh of football and soccer. It's like Kill the Man when we were younger. But you're it's kind of like that. You know, you throw it up and
you're throwing up tackle. Yeah.
A lot of running, man. Those guys are in great shape. Had a chance to do that. And that kind of springboarded everything to go to ESPN, you know, and went up there and was up there for a little while. You know, had a little tete-a-tete with my coworker. But that was kind of like the springboard for the ESPN stuff.
You know what? But before we move on, I would be remiss if – I know everybody wants to know about the incident.
The incident with
good old T.O. I mean, everybody knows they've heard it. Can you enlighten the Triple Threat podcast people a little bit about T.O.?
Hey, let me interject real quick. DJ, you may not even know this. I went to college with T.O.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. He left. He was a year ahead of me. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was hoping you'd bring this up. Knock it out.
First of all, I want to say T.O.'s a good dude, man. He's a good dude. But
there he
is. No, but at the time – this is when I just started doing radio in Philadelphia. So at the time, I'm on the radio with Edge Locatality and the morning team. And if you ever, anybody that's been to Philadelphia know it, like radio in Philadelphia is totally different than radio in Atlanta. It's just different. It's just up north is just different. So the game before they played the Dallas Cowboys, they lost. T.O. had – there was some speculation. Like, he had a Mike Irvin jersey on, which, you know, in Philadelphia, that's a no-no.
Right.
And that morning, on the morning show, Angelo proceeds to say that T.O. quit on the team, that T.O.'s a mild contender, all the, like talking bad about him. And I'm sitting there, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying a whole lot. Like, I'm kind of letting him go. And I'm like, no, I don't think T.O. quit, yada, yada, yada. I'm interjecting, but I'm not saying a whole lot in his defense because I don't know the whole story. I just know that he had on a jersey being in Philadelphia. That's a no-no.
Right.
So I don't know who told T.O. whatever they told him, but it got back to him like I was talking about him or saying something negative. So at that point, you know how it is. I'm going into the locker room, and I'm going to practice, and T.O. says something to me, and I look, and I'm like, who is he talking to? who is he talking to? So he comes back again, and he says something slick, right? So I was out of I was totally out of place. I was wrong for what I did. I admit that because I had business like looking for him and going and saying what I said. I walked up on him like, "Who are you talking to? Don't get it twisted." It's so many words. I can't. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I'll use a little bit more.
No doubt.
Yeah.
We can read between them lines for sure.
Yeah. So that was that. And so after I realized that I was wrong, I'm getting ready to leave. So I'm walking out, and he squared up with me. He's like, "What's up?" And I was like, "What's up?" So now you know how that go. You square up. It's only one or two outcomes at that point.
Hey man. It like King of the Comedy when Steve Harvey say, "When you look me up and down, everybody know what that means."
Yeah, you know what it is, because it's only a matter of time for somebody swinging. And what's the rule in the street? Don't get swung on. So I swung first. So I swung first. He slipped my punch. He swung. I slipped his punch. We're tussling, right? So I throw him on the training table. And I never forget, Jeremiah tried to grab me. They was like, "Get him." So Trot grabbed me first.
Right.
You know, Trot country strong, man.
Right.
Trot put me in the chicken wing. And I'm bad at Trot, right? Because I'm like, why he grabbed me? Because now I'm about to get beat up. So somebody grabbed T.O., and that was it. We didn't even hit each other, man. We just tussled. But it was just like, it was funny because now when you think back on it and you hear the different variations of the story, like you get out that he beat me up in the locker room and he knocked me out and stuff and I knocked him out. Dude, it didn't even happen like that. We didn't even hit each other. Yeah. It was the worst fight that you could ever have, that two people that called themselves mad at each other could ever have. Yeah.
And I can see exactly how something like that can happen. I mean, you just out and you still not going to be the one that's going to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
T.O. got his own pride. He got his own ego. So,
yeah.
I mean, everybody in life done been through stuff like that. So, I know the people love to get a chance to hear that. 2011 to 12, obviously you with ESPN. And the one thing that I love for guys to talk about on the show is stuff that they've had to overcome, situations that dudes have been in. Nobody's perfect. Everybody's had their own situations. Obviously, 2013, you had issues. And I want you to talk about the incidents. You don't have to talk about the incidents specifically on what happened, but how did you get through those particular instances and obstacles to get to a position where you are today, where you learned from those incidents to get you in a better place? How did you get yourself from out of those spots to the Hugh Douglas we see today?
Well, I can tell you, first off, is that the one thing that I learned, I had a great group of people that helped me get through that. Michael Strahan was one of them. And I'll never forget when all of that stuff went down with the ESPN and the young lady up there in Connecticut.
Right.
Michael Strahan told me, he said, "Hugh, everything that made you a great player on the field works against you in the real world." And he was like, being aggressive and being in your face. Because that was the problem, Shot. With my ESPN incident with Michael Smith, I'm the type of guy like this. If me and you, if you're doing something that I'm trying to learn how to do, I'm going to learn you. Because that's how we do as football players.
No doubt.
I'm going to soak up the knowledge, and I'm going to give you the respect that you deserve. And if you have a problem with something that I'm doing, I'm going to come to you directly. And we're going to talk about it. Because in football, you know, your heart, you wear your heart on your sleeve because you're getting critiqued all the time. No so doubt. You're used to criticism. Yeah. You're not used to hearing stuff that's being said behind your back. You're not mm-hmm. used to that. And see, that's where it started for me, because me and Michael Smith, I had a tremendous amount of respect for Mike. Tremendous right. amount. Because he had been doing television for a long time. And with him and Jemele Hill, when they came in, I'm kind of their protege in a sense.
Right, right.
So I remember having a conversation with my boss at the time. And he sets me down in the office. Now, I'm thinking, me and Michael have a pretty good relationship at this point. So he sets me down one day, and he says something to the effect that Michael doesn't like the fact that you're not coming in the same time that he comes in, or something mm-hmm. like that. Or he doesn't like the fact that, you know, you do this, that, or the third. So mm-hmm. I'm sitting there, right? And my mind is like, wow, I can't believe this. I can't yeah. believe he's telling me this.
Right.
So in my mind, I'm like, we have a relationship. I can come confront you about that. I can ask right. you that.
Right.
So I asked him. And, you know, I didn't think about it at the time, but he hemming and hawing. He didn't want to tell me. And I'm like, hey, dog. And I just said, you know, just like I'm talking to you, hey, dog, you got a problem with me, I can fix it. All you got to right. do is tell me. Just like
right.
that.
Right.
And so I guess that I didn't say it nice enough or whatever. So yeah. that was the beginning of everything. So, you know, we go to the NABJ, and we're hanging out. And him and Jemele Hill, they're on stage. They're doing their thing. So I roll up on Mike. Everybody's having a party. Mm-hmm. So I roll up on Mike, and I'm like, yo, Mike, what's going on? And Mike's on stage, so I'm trying to get on stage. Lady won't let me on stage, no problem. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk to him after he gets off stage. He looks at me shocked and puts his finger in my face. Don't you ever effing do that again.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to? Who are you talking to? So so I was like, Mike, you all right?
You all right, because you're tripping right now.
Yeah, because I'm trying to, you know, before I go where I'm going to go, I'm trying to make sure he cool, because it might, you know, he might be going through something. So I'm trying to get right. him to stop.
Right.
So he's walking away. So Shaq, I grabbed him by his arm. I didn't pull him hard, but I whispered in his ear. I said, don't let this TV shit get your ass beat. That's what I told him. I said, I'll beat your ass in front of all these people. I didn't yell it. And I was wrong for saying it. I admit that. And he got mad and was like, I'm going to get you fired. So
wow.
I get up the next day. You know, I'm getting ready to go to breakfast. And you know how when you go to breakfast, you know you've been talked about. You're like, you know, right. it's one of them feelings you have.
You can sense it. You can sense it. Everybody looking at your little strange.
Everybody yeah. sideways. So I'm like, man, let me go ahead and catch me a fight up out of here. Because if I see this cat and he say something slick, I'm going to split him. I was like, I'm going to split him. So it's going to be worse. So I said, I'm going to holler at him when we get back to work Monday. So I go back to Bristol. As soon as I get off the plane, shot my phone blowing up. My agent talking about, what you do? I said, what you talking about? He said, what you do? Michael Smith said, you tried to fight him. I said, I told him what happened.
Right.
And it became, he was drunk. He was belligerent. He was acting up. It became all of that. It became all of that.
Yeah.
And so now I'm the bad guy, you know? And so it was one of those things where, you know, I put myself in that situation.
Yeah.
And trusting somebody and being me.
Mm-hmm.
And then unfortunately, right after that, a chick that I was fooling around with up there in Bristol that I had no business fooling around with because I was married, doing my thing, she gets mad because I'm leaving. And I said some mean stuff to her, and mm-hmm. that got in, and she went and said that I put my hands on her. And mm-hmm. I was like, wow, God's trying to tell me something. God's trying to tell me that the way you're moving is not the way you're supposed to be moving, you know, because it's too much. Like, at that time, it's nothing that you could have said that anybody would have believed about me. Like, you know what I mean? It was like,
because
you're talking about a malcontent, somebody out there fighting coworkers, you know, beating up women and things of that nature. And that I did not do either one of those things. But at the time, when you hear that and you see stuff happening so much back to back, what are you going to believe?
Right.
What do you believe? So I just had to step back for a minute, man. I had to step back and I had to reevaluate my life. And I had to move. And I knew, I was like, you can't live the way that you used to live. You can't do it. Can't do that. Because right now you're in a position where you might not bounce back from this. You might not. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
I was nuclear shocked. I sat at home for 2 years in a basement of my home and just was trying to figure out what it was that I did to deserve this and how I could put myself back on track.
Yeah.
And I just had to sit there and I had to do a whole soul searching. I had to try to reconnect with my family. That didn't work. Wife ended up leaving me. So I was at rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, can't give up. It ain't in me to give up. Yeah. But I just, you know, just prayed about it, man. Took a little bit of time off, started going to church, and just really, really said, listen, you can't live that fast, that NFL kind of, not saying that all NFL players live like that, but you know what I'm talking about. Right.
No doubt.
You can talk to anybody you want to talk to the anyway kind of way and say, and you can't live like that because that's not the right way to do things.
Yeah.
So I fell back, man, and I said, you know what? I had to reinvent myself. Just maintain my focus and, like, just become a better person. And that's what I did, man. And been here in Atlanta for, 7 years now? And man, just trying to do everything possible every day to make sure that I don't put myself in positions like that anymore and just be the best person that I can be every day.
Man, first off, I've always had mad respect for you. Obviously, we don't know each other for some years now. But the fact that you opened up your heart, you was able to kind of express tough times that were going on in your life, I think will benefit so many people, man, for people to be able to hear you say certain things and then say, hey, I had to figure it out myself. I had to reinvent myself. I had to find a way to be better. And I think that's going to help so many people because a lot of people are going through their own struggles. Everybody had their own thing they go through.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're able to put that out for all these people to be able to hear, understand, and see you go through and then now see where you're at, I think it's beautiful, bro. I think I have even more respect for you just hearing the story, hearing you talk about it, but even more than that, see where you have taken off now. I mean, obviously, everybody can catch you on 92.9 The Game every single morning. You've been crushing that for years now. Always a good listen. I meet people all the time that ask me, do I know you? Because they love listening to you. So it's definitely a thrill. Man, I want to ask you, last year you were inducted into the Black College Foundation Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember listening to you talk about that on the radio and what it meant to you and how emotional it was to be looked at as one of the premier players who ever come through and play college football. What was that like when you got that call and what was it like to have that experience?
I tell you what, Shaq, even to this day, it's still kind of hard to believe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That you're in the Hall of Fame with Mel Blount, guys like Paul Jones, you know what I mean? And you're sitting there, Michael Strahan, Jerry Rice, Shannon Sharpe, Hall of Famer. And you're sitting there, and you're like, wow.
I'm
one of them. So it's always a humbling experience, man. And it's one of those things where when you talk about HBCUs and you talk about kids that feel like they can't go to these schools or whatever and be drafted or whatever, you're like, man, it's too many cats that are doing way too well that actually say that. So, man, it's still a humbling experience. It's something that I'm still not used to. I have a HBCU Hall of Fame jacket that I have.
Hall of Fame.
I still look at it and be like, wow, this is crazy. It's just crazy,
man. That's pretty
cool. Crazy. That's
pretty cool.
And the history, you know, you talk about the history of the cats that been in there and that are in there. It's like, man, it's an experience, no question.
Man, definitely deserve it. I mean, the numbers that you did obviously are deserving. So you belong in the crew, bro. You belong there. So
it's cool to know
you for sure, man. Before we let you get out of here, bro,
we ain't gonna talk no UGA. We ain't gonna talk UGA. Man,
that's what I'm saying. Before I let you get out of here, I gotta ask you about the home team. You cover the home team as much as anybody here. First off, what's going on with the Falcons? Obviously, he's got a win last week. Lose Dan Quinn, lose Thomas Dimitroff, and then talk about, obviously, Georgia and where you think they go going forward.
The Falcons, I like Coach Morris. I want to say that. I think just listening to him, and, you know, sometimes in situations like this when a new head coach, everybody always talks about how, you know, everybody wants to learn, like, win because now – You're high. The fact that the head coach is fired, now the reality that you could be fired too kind of sets in. They play with a lot more fire, no question about that. And even to this day, Shock, I'm still trying to sit back and process what I saw. This is what I came up with, and just listening to some of his press conferences over the last couple of days, I think Coach Morris is starting to marry the past with the present. And what I mean by that is, you hear him in his press conference, he talk about that old Dirty Bird swag. Mm-hmm. You heard, he said that a few times now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he talked about playing with that grit and that attitude and how that team was a team that nobody really believed in, but they were the Dirty Birds. Right. I think he's trying to bring that mentality back, because the one thing that this team has not had in the last couple of years is an identity. And when you think about the defense and what Coach Quinn wanted it to be. But to be honest, every week we were sitting here trying to figure out what this defense was. What is their identity? Can't get to the quarterback.
Right.
They're not a great cover team. You know, it looked like the Keystone Cops back there a few times as far as the secondary was concerned. So what is your identity? So the one thing that jumped out to me last week with the defense was it looked simple. It looked real simple.
Right.
And it allowed folks to just go out there and do what they do. You know, for me, I always felt like this. Offense is the side of the ball where everybody got to be on. You got to think. You can't really let your emotions take over on offense.
Yeah.
Defensively, if your wife hits you in the head with a pot and you're mad, you can take that to work with you. You can take that to work with
you. Right.
Especially on the defensive line. As long as it's simple, you ain't doing a whole lot of thinking. You go out there, you can take it out on the next man.
C-ball, hit ball.
Yeah, that's it. Basically, that's what it is. And it looked like that's what they were able to do, because they looked intense and fresh the whole game. And so I think that's what he's trying to do, man. He's trying to bring back that old school mentality.
I like that, man. I think it's a good opportunity for Raheem Morris and that crew. They got 10 more games to make something happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this season go. Obviously, another team that everybody, you know, pays attention to is the my Bulldogs. Obviously, took a big L last weekend. Dogs took an L versus Bama, man. What do you think is the future for? Everybody knows that defense is going to be good. They're really good. But Stetson Bennett at quarterback, can that offense, what you saw versus Bama, be a legit top four team that could be in the college football playoff and win it?
See, I'm glad I get a chance to talk to you, because this is how I felt, and I've never played offense. You did. You played quarterback. So I'm going to always defer to you deference. I'm going to pay deference to you in this. But I'm going to tell you what it looked like to me.
That's why I asked you, because you're a defensive guy now. You see the offense a little different. So
you
can see it out of some different lenses that can give – a good insight to some people about what you think.
But you're at that position, so we're going to compare notes. We're just going to compare notes. This is what I saw. Like, Stetson Bennett, and I said this, he has done nothing to lose you games.
Right.
But he also hasn't done anything to win you games either. And that's, like, that was so obvious last week to me.
Right.
When you talk about, like when you're playing a team against like Bama, when you're playing a team like that, the turnover ratio, that's huge.
No doubt. For
Georgia to come out shocking in the first or second play to get a turnover, that is huge. That puts you in position to put yourself in a great spot during the course, because you're playing chess. When you're playing a team like that and y'all evenly matched, you're playing chess.
No doubt.
So you go right back. And because of your stature, that's not your fault, because that's the way God built you, to give the ball right back to that team and let them go for it. Dog, you can't have that.
Yeah.
You can't have turnovers. You can't have batted balls like that. You can't. Yeah. And at that spot, in that course of the game, like a game like that, that's when your quarterback got to step up and be kind of special.
And I said it from – I said it from the beginning of the week. I said I didn't think this offense was made to come from behind. I think this offense was good when the game is even or you're up front and you're on top. But when you had to force the football, that's where Georgia kind of got in trouble.
Yeah, man. So, you got to have that guy. And that's what I was like what's the name? JT Daniels. That's when you start to wonder – like, he's a statue from what I've heard. Like, he's a statue. Mm-hmm. But he's a bigger quarterback. He has a big arm. And you kind of look at that and you kind of wonder. Now, Mac Jones, like, people sleeping on Mac Jones.
He's crushing it right now. He's killing.
He's a lot better. He's a lot better than people give him credit for.
Like, his number's crazy.
You got it. Like, when you're evenly matched with a team like that that you're going to see again, like, you can't. I don't want to call him a game manager, but you got to have somebody that's going to give you a little bit more. Because you talk about George Pickens and him stepping his game up. I think he's going to be a great player. But that young receiver core still, they have some growing to do. And they got time to grow during the course of the season. But I just feel like the quarterback spot, you have to be a little bit more dynamic there. Because that defense is going to keep you in the game. That boy Z. Ojulari, good God.
He get off that edge. They got some dudes over there now.
Man, listen. I'm watching him shocked. I'm like, good googly, that cat can turn the corner. He got some serious beard when it come around that corner.
It ain't that 53, but he got a 13. He got a 3.
Bro. I wish I had that kind of beard. That boy, listen. He'll shock, and he does some amazing stuff to get his butt back in the pocket. He gets in the pocket.
Yeah. All right, man. Last thing. How did you get the nickname Turbo Bird? What is that about?
Let me tell you. That is not my nickname. That is some cats in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
That went on to Google it. The Google whatever it is, the thing.
Yeah.
And they did that. And I threatened them every time. I'm like, I'm just waiting for one of y'all cats to roll up on me and call me that. Because that was
I'm going to say, I ain't never heard nobody ever call you that. I was like, what is that?
Oh, Hugh Douglas, because I told him if they roll up on me and call me that, I was swinging, but I ain't gonna swing no more. Because I'm not, you know, I'm a kinder, gentler Hugh Douglas. But that ain't
Lamont Chill, man. Lamont Chill.
You know, call me Lamont is my mom.
Hey man, hey, on the real, man, I appreciate you carving out a little time for us today, man. I think people are gonna be excited to listen to everything that happened today, man. I appreciate you taking the time for sure. It's been fun catching up with my frat brother Hugh.
Yes, sir. I want to
tell people continue to subscribe, man. Continue to listen. Continue to tell people. This is the Triple Threat Podcast, and today has been it's been a lot of good gems dropped by my guy. He talked a lot of good stuff, so I'm excited to see the feedback that people have from this particular podcast. So we appreciate everybody joining the Triple Threat Podcast with my main man. Hugh Lamont Douglas on the show today on the Triple Threat Podcast. We appreciate y'all joining. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.